we have from last time that basically this is the thing that says separated algebra. This is the first arrow. So we this connection here. So let me just say theorem. So remember that let A be a bi-algebra, be an algebra with something not quite the co-multiplication and the co-unit, which I put quotes around. They're actually just algebra morphisms between the spaces that as they would be for real co-multiplication and co-unit. So the claim is that there are a couple of claims. The first claim is that A with epsilon, I mean this co-multiplication, this co-unit, they will actually form by algebra. If and only if the category A mod is a tensor subcategory. Of this vector space category we talked about last time. Okay. Why don't we first start with that? The second part deals with the braidedness. So, proof of the first part. Let's think about what it means for A mod to be a tensor subcategory of that K. We remember that in that K, so the tensor product is just tensor product vector spaces. The identity is K. And also the associativity constraint, the left constraint, and the right constraint are all identity, the identity natural isomorphism. And what we developed last time was that using the fact that delta and epsilon are algebra morphisms, we gave an A module structure on tensor products. So now, this is the part that's new. Okay, so now forget, well, kind of inherit these from those, except that you have an A module structure on U tensor V, right? With this, I call the tensor A module structure. And that's basically just to remind, there's no color chart here. No? It's okay. It's all right. If they have it, I will use it. Just to remind you, so let A, X be an element of A acting on U tensor V. It's given by this map. So this is something in A tensor A acting on U tensor V. Okay, so that, so because it's an algebra morphism, so it pulls back the algebra structure, an A tensor A module structure to an A module structure on U tensor V. And here, the I equals K with this trivial A module structure. Okay, just quick reminder is that X acting on an element inside K, let's call it lambda, is epsilon acting on X. This gives you a number and multiply by lambda. So just quick reminder. And what do we need to prove now? So most of these, so I'm saying that, let's let these form a category, except that with these module structures, thank you. With this module structures on them, what do we need to check? So all the commutative diagrams will carry over from the vector space category to this one, like all the triangle axiom, the pentagon axiom, they will carry over because the maps are the same, identity is the same, like as such theoretic maps, they're the same. So they will all carry over. The only thing we need to check that is that these things are actually morphism in the category. They are new category. So we are working with, so we want to check that, so I said it's a subcategory. So now not any vector space, not any linear maps will be inside our A mod, right? Will be a morphism of A mod. Only things that are A linear will be a morphism of A mod.
And the left implies the right.
So I want to prove them kind of at the same time.
Okay.
You can think of either way, but I want to make more explicit what the right side means and write it down, and you say the left side has to satisfy these things. Okay. Module with some technicality. So I'm kind of trying to do both. But now I'm explaining the right-hand side. Let's just say double. Maybe for some purpose, it's better to fix one direction first, but and then say everything reverses. But I don't know. So our goal is to ensure that these things are inside the morphisms of A mod. Okay. So there are fewer arrows. And what does it mean? It means that we want to show that AL, this identity map, well, considered as maps between the appropriate spaces, are A-linear. And A-linear just means that action of A, this map commutes with action of A. Let's just say, write down, for example, one of them and see what it means. So remember that associativity constraint is indexed by three things in the category, and we kind of just re-bracket the objects. And in general, well, if it's just tensor category, this does not have to be identity, but in this case, it's identity. The identity map. A is identity. Okay, so so now let us. So let's write down. What we want to show is, the requirement that A is inside here reads like this. This is the action by x equals, maybe I can write rho of x, but I'll leave it in x inside. Okay. And you might as well stick in UVW now, I guess. Okay, so this is just means that the action and the associativity constraint commute. Now if we stick in, like, for any UVW, each, like, where U inside U, V inside V, and W inside W, we get this equals to that. With appropriate bracketing. So, maybe for now, let us write out what the left hand side is. Okay. So the left-hand side will be let x, an element of A, act on mu tensor V tensor W, and with the bracket. So bracket tells you how x acts. And you remember, for vector space, we identify all the brackets. So in principle, it doesn't matter, except the action of x will be different, depends on how you bracket. OK, so I'll write this part first. This part will be the co-multiplication tensor identity. And so let me explain a second. So here it means that first x sees, you know, a tensor product between this and that. So it splits into two copies and one acting on each. And the fact that the left one acts on this piece, you have to basically do delta again on the left piece of this thing. Okay, so, and then, okay, and then you, I guess you can kind of re-bracket, but, so re-bracket doesn't matter, so I just, you know, leave it open. I did not bracket. Yeah, on the right-hand side, is that, so you re-bracket first, so this one will be x acting on u tensor v tensor w. You bracket the last next second two. And x, so the same rule will kind of apply, so you kind of, you first x sees these two tensor copies. So it sees these two, and then, but you know, look more carefully, you see two more on the right hand side. So you have identity tensor. with that. And you can see tensor W. So you see that they're very similar expressions. The only thing that's different is whether you, the second, after applying delta, you apply delta in the first one or the second one. And that's kind of exactly the co-associativity condition. So if delta satisfies co-associativity, then this apparently ought to be true, right? And the other way around, so this, the other way around, there's a slight technicality. Huh?
Sorry, could you write down the co-associativity?
Co-associativity, yeah. Means that so if you remember this diagram, so there's A here, A has A here, and it has A times A here. So but I'll just, this is just write out an equation. So proving, so I guess proving that direction is fairly easy. You get the same element, so they act the same. And the other way, they're kind of two slightly different way to do it. But let's require that, so a reasonable condition to put on a category or a module, an algebra, is that if it acts the same on all modules, and if a particular element acts the same way in all of its modules, then all its finite dimension modules, let's declare the two elements are the same. So if, as long as the algebra satisfies that, then so then if the same for all UVW, any for any A module UVW, then this X, this element inside A tensor A tensor A, and that element inside A tensor A tensor A ought to be the same. So it's totally, there's nothing very straightforward if they're all, A is finite dimensional. If it's infinite dimensional, you need to kind of make this requirement. I'm not sure how strong it's a very reasonable requirement. So let's just take it as proof. And now let's do the braiding. So not completely finished, but the other two proof follow the same spirit. So let's say So basically, in this proof, there is this correspondence. So this being co-associated will correspond to the this being A is in a home of A mod. So A is so this is the associativity constraint A. So let's be careful. And then and the fact that S1 is co-unital, you remember there's something like this map, right? There's a left-hand side requirement and a right-hand side requirement. So it will correspond to L and R being inside home of A mod. Maybe I'm being a bit late, did not remind you of definition. They have identity, but you use this to prove that the identity is in home of A mod. So it's not, so identity is definitely a linear map, so that's why it was fine before we checked that. And L, there are separate things to check because you have kind of slightly different A mod structure because the target space, even though it's identity, they're identified, but one goes from K tensor V to V and the other one's from V tensor K to V. So basically falls from this. Okay. So that's a sketch. Now, now let's do the second part. So we asked the left hand side if you're sticking some sort of R, you get a braided by algebra. That will be if and only if. That's the case if and only if this A module is braided with a braiding. You know, it's the same kind of tensor category is braided. Let me not state the full thing. So it takes the same A and the same L and the same R, but the braiding will be. Well, there will be with braiding C, right? Braided C is kind of given by, well, C U tensor V is given by tau R. So this is a sketchy note. So, like a braiding comes from this R, and you first apply R as an element of A tensor A on a couple vectors, you mean a tensor product of two vectors. And then switch those things. So that's the definition. So this thing will satisfy the axiom of braiding in this framework, this category. And this category as a tensor category. And the claim is also that, you know, if you have braiding like this, you can recover an element in A tensor A, which is the universal R matrix. Let me do the same kind of correspondence. So this thing actually comes up a whole lot. And so this kind of thing, it comes up a whole lot between algebra and categories. Well, I haven't said what it is. Let me do a chart similar to that. Okay, so so remember being the what does it mean to be a braided by algebra? So first of all, so what's new to the braided? Talk about the R. I'm only talking about the R. Because the other parts are already dealt with. They give you the other the tensor part, the tensor structure. So now you have the R inside H tensor H. What does this correspond to? It corresponds to that, you know, C constructed as such is it's natural. And why is it natural? Natural, I guess, means that kind of So it kind of supposed to commute with the A linear things. So there is, so let me see. How do I, maybe it's very sketchy, you know, but take this first. Okay, wait a second. So, and then R is invertible. So which gives you that C, because tau is definitely an invertible map, then you can get that C is also invertible, which means an isomorphism, like a natural isomorphism, which is what we need for braiding. And then the next thing is that it has these conditions, which might look a bit strange at first. Well, this one is not the worst. So for any X inside A, we have that this equation is satisfied. So these are product in A tensor A, right? And this kind of correspond to, we'll check these. C is A linear. Let's see why, because, well, like, it means it respects the action and this, well, okay. So we will write out what this condition means, and then we'll check that they're the same. So let me just, so there has two more, just reminding all the, you all the definitions. Okay, R13, R23, and I want to start by maybe checking the last two because it seems like a little more. This is H1, the first hexagon axiom, and this other this other part of the definition will correspond to the braiding satisfying H2, the second hexagon axiom. Okay. So again, work on the side of the categories. And let's just start here. Because kind of has a little, well, we can start from here too, I guess. So whatever. Okay, let's start from here. So let's first write down where C goes between. So C is isomorphism between one way of tensoring and the opposite way of tensoring, basically. I mean, a natural isomorphism. But this will go between U tensor V and to V tensor U. And it's defined as composition of tau and R. So you let R first act on. As A tensor A, you can act on U tensor V, and then the tau you switch U V. Okay, so I'm claiming that this is an A module morphism. Okay, so let's say what if I act on it. So what I want is that. So you get something on V tensor W. I want to say that when you let any X inside A act on this, the resulting vector of this map, we will get the same thing as first letting X act on U tensor V, followed by tau U V, and followed by this C, I see U. I mean, I want you for now forget about what the vectors are. Do I need to remember? Not really, right? So, well, you see why. Okay, maybe let me write one more step. Okay. So from here, I will not treat them as equal yet. I'm just expanding the right-hand side. So this will be, what would this be? You would have the co-product of X. U tensor V, and now you will compose with. So this is something in A times A. So this is just multiplication in A times A. Times R, and then compose with some switching. Okay. And I'm claiming that I want to forget about this. Okay. And on this side, you will have first R acting on U tensor V. This is just something A tensor A. And then you compose with tau, and now you let X act on it, which will be, so it will be just delta X. The order, all right. Now, because it's true for any U tensor V, I mean, you can kind of ignore them for a second. It's true for any. So as elements in A tensor A, they ought to be the same. So this is, again, under the kind of reasonable assumption that the algebra behaves such that if it's true for all of the modules, then these elements must be the same. Okay, so let's kind of, well, this is not a proper, I mean, well, it depends. I mean, let's just discuss this part, because that's basically the meat. So we almost have the left-hand side now, because this op is just kind of tau composed with delta composed with tau. Remember when I decided the op, defined op. Maybe it's like just tau on the left-hand side. I hope. It depends on what you, I mean, what the tau does. Okay, you just tau does on the vector space, that should be careful. Okay, how come? Yeah, I think I forgot my R inverse, probably. I'm just noticing mistake. Oops. Can I find my purple one again? And the way is that, so it looks better. So, I mean, I want to multiply to the right hand side, certainly. And now I have two tasks to deal with. And I hope, okay, look, so I guess what I would get would be that R delta X, so if I move the R to the right hand side, I get, and I ought to move the tau on the left hand side, I guess, and tau inverse is the same as tau. So I'm slightly, so I guess as action, I mean, it's one of the taus dealing with the vector space switch, so I, go ahead. So what my side confusion was that, so as an element inside A tensor A, okay, as an element inside A tensor A, delta op is just tau composed with this. However, I somehow got an extra tau here.
Seems to me that you should have no tau. You should have.
What should I have? I mean, I could put tau, one of them would be tau inverse, but the same. I'm maybe not very careful with the vector space switch. So maybe it's. It's okay. Yeah, which I'm showing, right? I plug it in and say that must be conditioned delta R and tau satisfied together. So maybe I'm okay because this one switches the vector space U V, like V and U. And so and the first copy acts on V and the second copy acts on U and you switch it back. So as an action, maybe. So I don't know why. Something was not very careful. I'm sorry. I wasn't very
careful. It has to be like that because the other one only acts on UV, so the other one has to also act on UV.
Yeah, this side acts on U tensor V.
Yeah, so this the other side has to also act on UV.
No, the tau on the left, the two taus on the left side have different substitutions.
So, I was just saying that. No, Taiwanese one's the same, right? In a way. Well, I guess you could say not, but it's just different interesting. But the thing it does can kind of without all of the labels.
Are you sure that delta op is just tau composed with delta, not tau delta tau? I mean, delta op doesn't actually switch U and V, right?
Yeah, maybe so, let's check. Delta op doesn't switch U and V, but usually
but,
delta
but
op.
But if you just have one tau, then you will switch U and V.
Yes, so I think maybe the action of delta op is the same as this one.
Uh-huh.
But as an algebra element, it switches. I mean,
if you times an r from the right side and an r minus 1 to the left side, you still have already proven c delta c should be equal to delta.
C delta c? So,
yeah, that's right. So there's tau acting
yeah.
on A tensor A.
Yeah.
But that's not what that tau is. That's the tau is acting on U and V.
Right. I mean, so anyway, I think this induces. I mean, I think it induces as an action. It's the same as X of X action. That's what I think. So I mean, but nevertheless, I mean, reading it off right away, it's a little confusing. That was just my point. I was proposing to write what's the action of this, right? So we're still, even though we write out the algebra element, maybe we cancel a bit too early. But we actually care about the action on them. And as long as the action is agreed, then I can claim the algebra element is agreed. But on this, the left hand side, let's say, see if you acting on U tensor V. So it will be kind of second copy act on the first one, the first copy act on the second one. So I have this notation, which I did not spend lengthy time explaining to you, but I will use it here in the computation. Actually, the op is 2 and 1. Yeah, and I'll just kind of check. So, and yeah. And I'm just writing out. I'm not sure why I'm writing it. Okay. So, and let's see, so it will be first, it will be, right, first switching, the same as first switching V and U, first switching V and U, and acting on that order, and then switching it back. So it is tau, the tau is, I guess the thing is, tau is not A tensor A, tau is U tensor V, tau, U V tau, so anyway.
Well, I think the thing is that, so in the action, you have the tau that acts only on the delta, whereas now these tau act on everything to the right of the delta.
That's right, that's
right.
So if
you want it to act only on the delta, you have to put an extra tau to the right of the delta to reverse.
So, I mean, I think that was the point, but I just wanted to read so easily off, like, immediately, but then I cannot quite skip it like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Tau UV and tau VU.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, but this is the inverse of that. This is the inverse of tau UV.
Yeah.
So, maybe I'll just, yeah. But this will be, okay, as actions, it's the same as that. So, I need, that's why I said I need to be careful, but I cancel slightly too early, but you get the idea. But all the proofs go kind of similarly. You can kind of the other thing you can do is with these two, but I think it's maybe enough to give the flavor. But these two are also kind of important. The fact that, I mean, not this one. So somehow, these requirements give you the commutative diagrams, but you also want it to be natural isomorphism, and natural, it's not being an element of the algebra. I think I call them things. It's not being an element of the algebra. It will kind of make sure that it commutes with all the A linear maps, right? It makes sure it commutes with the linear maps, which makes it natural, like it kind of respects, I mean, the that's the next thing with respect to the morphism of the category. So, And somehow this one, so you, usually when you look at the category, you think A linear is kind of more natural. You first say, oh, there's more morphism in the category. And then you say it required to be natural, do something kind of a little more special with respect to the tensor product. But in this, on this side, you know, just the fact that it's inside here, take care of that, and you have this kind of weirder condition to take care of the fact that it's A linear. So
so natural just means it commutes all the A linear maps.
Yeah, I need to be careful about what commutes mean, but you can probably, when you write it down, it'll be obvious. So, I mean, actually, C natural means this. Let me write it down. So, for all, any pair of UV, U tensor V, this V tensor W, and so it's a natural isomorphism between these two functors. You can take two maps, you compose them like this way, and the other way, the other one is. You have FG, the delta function switches the order, and this map commutes. And you see that F and G are A linear maps, like by, because they're in the category, so they are required to be A linear maps. And now if this is some kind of, you know, some element of inside action of some A tensor A element, maybe composed with tau even, that's not so important, then this must commute because these are designed to respect these. So by design, these are now designed to respect this. So it's kind of the role sometimes, kind of switch. Okay. The causality. Okay, so now let's go into some topology. Yeah, so to prove it, just kind of write out all of these. That's the most important thing to remember. So, I guess a couple of lectures ago, I gave this. I gave this thing where, you know, you get these, and you don't have some of the questions, you know what I mean? And, so today I would like to maybe explain. Before I can talk about invariance, right? So like a tensor functor between some category and some other category. I want to say if you definition of topological categories. I mean, well, maybe I call them that. I just group this thing. So the braids, the tangles, and ribbons will form. They all form some sort of tensor category, and I want to present this topological object in the language of tensor category. So let me start with this one, tangles, because that's so braids is kind of special, like it's special case of tangles, and ribbons and tangles with additional structure, kind of in a sense. So let's start here. First, we probably know some, well, everyone knows braids, probably. And tangles, just let me first say what the topologically, what the object is. So it kind of, in the world, sometimes they define this with some sort of rigid thing. So maybe they want them to, it's embedding of lines and circles inside this. Inside R2 cross 1, 0, 1. So you can think of like 0 and 1 here, and this R2 inside here. But what they require is that you can have a bunch of endpoints, but they all come in, I forgot how they, when they start labeling it, I can say maybe 1, 2, 3, okay? So they want them to come in fixed places, like it's a space with holes, and then you have this XY plane. And the y, let me say the y has, like when x equals 0, there are a bunch of integer labeled places where you can stick in your strings or whatever, right? And they always start from the left, filling in from the left. It just makes it, when you stack one on top of the other, it's nicer, so that they don't end up at different places. So maybe say There's a tangle of type maybe 3, 2. I forgot, like the 2, 3, 3. Maybe it's 2, 3. Let's say 2. Let's say. And so maybe you have, well, I don't know if I can manage to draw something like that. Maybe let's draw one.
Isn't the total number even?
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's why I have trouble drawing. So for example, this, right? Or you can have more complicated breaks.
That's 1, 3 or 3, 1.
Is it that important? Like your type. Okay. So one of those depends on your commission. I was thinking of down, bottom to top, so maybe I will call it 3-1. And you of course can have braids, like crossings in the middle. So that's what they are. Mm-hmm.
Is this kind of tangles have applications in quantum computing, complex quantum computing? Is the braiding, I know, if you define the time direction, right? So it represents the process, a quantum computing process. But but for these tangles, you have one goes to two, which means goes back in time.
Oh, yeah. So, but then you can imagine this as a measurement. You bring two like opposite charge states together in an alley. So like there's appropriate interpretation for these. So how do you get a number in the end is by tapping them all, kind of. If you want a number. In the end, you will look at probability.
For this kind of thing, you will have a kind of inner product.
Inner product.
Because you mean the number of probability.
So first, I guess. When the probability depends on what category you're talking about, it can be in some appropriate category, like maybe like this is kind of aside, like in, I guess quantum computing possibly. So let's say you have knots of some sort, and let me, I don't know what. So like you might decide to close them like this way, right? I don't know what. Okay, and then you can kind of. This probability might be given by in some appropriate category, not any category. Fixed, like there's some special one. It could be the Jones polynomial, or it's not in some appropriate category. In some other category, it might be evaluated to different numbers. So it depends on what category you're working with. So you call it inner product. So maybe I didn't think about interpretation as inner product. But you get a number in the very end.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an inner product of tangles. Sorry, but.
You get an invariant, like as a number for the topological.
So the parts of that knot outside those two horizontal lines means measurement?
Well, you might think one of them is like preparing a pair, and the other one is measurement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me draw a little more structure because I want to have something that I want to explain the structure. So okay, let me draw a little crossing here. So what happens if you do this? So you still have the whole R2 in the middle, so you can. One goes forward, one goes backwards. So when you read the topological, sometimes it can be annoying drawing everything with angles and precise coordinates. But that's just. But then after all, you're modeling out by some isotropy equations, which you don't care. That makes things the same as the box theorem presentation you made. So these are what tangles are, but just I guess in but. Topologically, we care about isotropy classes, so isotropy equivalence, maybe just basically explaining the concept of isotropy intuitively. I guess if you think of them being fixed and maybe have some stretchy rubber bands or whatever, anything you can do physically with them will be isotropy. So long as
they don't cross.
Whatever you can physically do with them, which is not, you don't break them. So
you can break. Right.
I'm saying you don't break them. So if you want to prove some of the things, it can be very tedious. How come it's so hard? It can be very tedious, but let's just, we won't go through the proofs and just rely on our intuition. So when you write down, so our goal is now write it, put these objects in the framework of tensor category. And in terms of generators and relations, so yeah, I'll write down the theorem, but you might have to take my word for like the, these are only the only relations, and these are the, you know, the generators part is easy to say. Okay, let me just go into it. Okay. I saw the it's okay. So now I want to have a tangled category. The tangled category. Let me just add the because I'm defining. It's one category. Basically, what I want is that I want the homomorphism, the morphisms of inside T, to be the to correspond to isotopy classes of tangles. So two morphisms are equivalent. Depends on what you call it. Like the equivalent are the same.
It's only.
If only the two tangles are isotropic. I mean,
so what are the objects?
I want them to design it so that we haven't defined the objects, but the goal is to create something such as morphisms are your tangles, your isotropic classes of tangles, isotropic classes. So you will take care of all these isotopy relations and everything, but okay. So
all the morphisms are isotropic classes of tangles. There are no any other morphisms defined on this category.
Probably. It seems like I cannot think of more.
That's the definition, right? I mean,
that's
the definition
we want. And well, we haven't defined the left hand side.
It's
going to be the definition, basically. So I think no, but like I don't think there's anything else, but you know, well, I could be missing something really trivial or something, you know, whatever.
The objects can be anything. Well, you care.
No, objects are fixed things. So I'll tell you. So look at that picture where tangles start with a bunch of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So there's 5 3 types now. So the types can give you what's the beginning object and what's the final object. So a 5 3 type will map from object 5 to object 3, I guess. So let's say the objects are kind of given by pegs, but I mean, this is still in terms of pictures, and then I might write a more compact form for them. So like, I'm using the same example 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I call this day part 5, right? But oh, actually, I forgot. So tangles come with orientation. Let me for now put in random, you know, some random stuff. So there's orientation to deal with. So just not just 5. So in, when we go to grade, it's all one direction. So we don't need to, we just have a number to label it. But right now, let's read that off. Say, this is, the first one goes up. So I'm forgetting my convention. So that's minus. So let me, actually, I've erased this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You can count for yourself. So there's minus. And there's plus because it's going down, the second one. And the third one's going down, so it's plus. And the fourth one is going up, it's minus. And the fifth one's going down, so it's plus.
And the order matters.
The order matters. And so I guess in the category, an object can be labeled, like only the labeling matters, right? Kind of. So it's labeled by minus, plus, plus, minus. At least this one you won't lose any more. It's sufficient. Maybe they might give some extra notation or something, but this is basically. So on the top, right, so the object, like, let me just use the example. The first one is downward, so that would still be plus. I mean, I still think of that as plus. The second one is upwards, would be minus. And then the second one is actually downward, so it's plus, and then the third one is minus. So this object is given by plus, plus, minus, labeled by. And then you have this particular morphism going between them like that. That's an example, something that goes between the two spaces. And you might think, you know, various things you can ask, you know, like, so these are the objects, what are the morphism? Morphism are strips you can attach such that any non-empty slots are filled. So as you said, maybe, like you're saying, they need to add up to an even number, something, and because everything ends at a place, or they have to begin and end somewhere, so you have to have an even number. And so there are no morphisms between two objects where they add up to zero. And the third requirement is about signs, probably. But like, you can come up with extra condition, you know, properties that is satisfied. And the composable one will be like, if the middle one are the same, they're definitely composable, right? Like, imagine, something else here. I mean, you can try to compose it through the middle one if there's signs, because the labeling are such that they did not distinguish the top and the bottom, just going up and down. Okay, so anything else you need to say about it? Oh, okay, sure. I do. So here, just what a category is, and I want to say that two morphisms between, say, these two objects are equivalent if and only if they're isotopic as tangles.
So sorry, is there any rule as to the distribution of the pluses and minuses? The total number has to be even. But
well, so no, I mean a priori as objects, you can label them whatever way you want. It's just whether there exists morphism.
Yeah, sorry, I mean if there's a morphism, is there some rule on pluses and minuses? Or?
So maybe. Not quite, because if you go down, you get the opposite sign. If you exit from the top, you get a same sign. If you exit from the bottom, you get a minus sign. So there might be probably maybe some rules.
Reverse the sides to the top and add them to
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what it is. Yeah. So. So let's characterize the thing about this being isotopic tangles. So why not two morphisms the same? Okay. Or what are and all are together? If I can get that board.
You need to erase.
I guess I can erase this one.
Or you can lift the one behind.
I would wish that one.
You have this one.
Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll use this one. Okay. I'll use this one. Okay. You can never tell which is the board, which is the wall.
There's three boards.
Yeah, but they all have three words.
Yeah.
So as long as it's higher than the red caution sign, then it's okay.
There's no difference.
You can't move the backwards.
All right. So let's do this quickly. Let me write them down, maybe once and for all, and you can check. I mean, checking is a pain, so I will not recommend this. So tangle category. The strict tensor category, so generating as a tensor category. I'll explain. Strict tensor category generated by. Six things. And this is the obvious part, more often. So that's the obvious part. So one that goes that way. One that goes that way, and that way. So, you know, you see my drawings, those things. And a bunch of relations. I won't even fit on this board, actually. Okay, I'll draw part of it here. This means composition of the appropriate things. So read it strictly and carefully. This is one. I guess that's kind of your randomizer zero. With directions, kind of zero with. These things are uglier looking. There's a crossing here, and be careful to draw it out. Most of the things doesn't matter as long as I don't ruin the things. There's some order of capping. You be careful. But when you take that sort of bee into account, actually, this is a kind of off thing. There are the isotopic X diagrams in some sense, like the generator is isotopic X diagrams. I'll explain it. I don't know. It's a pain, such a pain. let me. This is. Okay. This is almost the same. This is some of them. I mean, this is four, which is kind of just plain isotropy of diagrams, like two-dimensional, which is a terminology and a concept I did not explain. But because if I don't need to prove this, I don't need to explain it.
Shouldn't the line which is on top always be on top?
Wasn't it? It was.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
It just twisted.
The left one, the one that goes on the bottom left, the left goes to the right. Just the top is shifted relative to the bottom.
So you get this one. So this is your. This is your randomizer 3. This is your randomizer 2, and of course there's this randomizer 1. Okay. And a few more. I mean, see, that's how tedious it is. Also, just the proof is also very tedious. Maybe.
And it's the opposite orientation of all those.
So this takes care of both. You mean these phrasing up?
Yeah.
You should be able to get them from the other one. That's probably why they're here. I mean, so some you cannot get from the other one, some you can. So I trust them that they are kind of a.
And it's a backboard.
Yeah, but I can do it. I guess I can. I don't want to. Okay. I don't want to do it. Okay, let me just. Two more. Almost done. Of course, you never have something really horizontal. I mean, in this scheme, otherwise. I try to avoid drawing things that are horizontal. But now I have a break, and there's a crossing that way. Okay. And pointing up, and this going down. The same as one I'm going to do. And I still have an opposite one to draw. This is not. So this is what the randomizer moves, but with isotropy, local isotropy. So the thing is that in the tangle category, you don't have a convenient language to say that anything that are isotopic, like planar planar diagrams, will be isotopic. So these are all the things that you have to say to. So now you only need to do local things, right? Once you have these things for me now.
The point is, since these are compositions of things, that they're broken up with caps and cups.
They're broken up what?
They're broken up into pieces that are hard to apply the local isotopy.
Yeah. It's kind of so that's like all like it's a eight relations. I mean, so you can draw them or you can write them too, right? You can write them. What it means is that you write all these maps as, you know, a composition and tensor product. So I kind of didn't tell you, but you probably.
Why this is not generated by the first one on the second row?
Because you cannot, because it's not topological. I mean, a priori, I'm defining these fields. So what we are allowed to do in this category, right? So if these are the morphisms, you can put them next left to right, which is in the tensor product, or put one on top of the other using composition. But you are not allowed to say, for example, like topologically, this looks so trivial, but you cannot, in this category, this is cap tensor identity, this is composed, well, no, the other way, this one composed with this one, is the same as identity. So, I mean, it's something you write down as equation. You can write it down as a tensor product or composition of these six objects, and you'll have a bunch of relations between them. So even though you see this one, at least, so they are kind of obvious because they're supposed to be, they're supposed to be coming from a topological object. You want them to capture the properties of topological objects. But when you write this out, it's actually a bunch of like symbols, right? Like how can you say the symbol right away, it's the same as that. So the writing master, that's what they were talking about. I mean, they topologically it comes from that, and I saw a copy of diagram just by shifting, right? But you cannot take that for granted, the thing is. So when you're computing things in the category, I mean, once it's established, maybe you can, because it's supposed to behave the same as, you know. I would still be careful because, like, just in case. Because they're not, when you write down as a tensor category, it's not a body object. Okay. But now, once you have all of these, actually, now they're designed to be the same as tangles. So, any of your intuition, like topological intuition, is about tangles. Once you write these things down, you get tangles. But you still need these because, so what do you need this for? Why do I introduce them now? Because when you talk about invariants of, say, tangles, we're talking about tensor functor from the category, the tangle category, to some other tensor category, some other category. And you need to check that in the new category, the image of these generators, the new category, satisfy this relation, right? That's what makes them a good tensor functor. And the new category should be a tensor category as well. We can put things together, but putting things together, you know, just in algebra, I guess, is the same as checking some relations. You need to say that the relation, the image of the generator satisfies the same relation in the new category. So that's why I write them down for the next step. One last thing, let's say. So a couple of things. It's easy to get braids from tangle categories, just the same type, but also all the signs are pluses. So 3 pluses to 3 pluses or 5 pluses, wherever you get your bn, like where n is the number of things. That's easy. And the only thing also, the also easy to get frame tangles, because the only thing you have here is this is no longer true. So this, I guess this is usually called Rademaster 1, is no longer true. So these two can be, maybe they can be in general, probably, so get your one, you get plus one framing, the other one get minus one framing, and I bought the belt, but I didn't use it, which you didn't show me last time, you can by doing it. Just imagining if you have a flat in the thing, and then you try to pull it straight after making this, and this means blackboard framing, one side, the same edge always pointing out. And then you straighten it, you will have a twist in the middle. So this one you get.
Do you want to stir it?
We're like late. We're for time. So maybe I can try. Okay, you can see that's what it means for the blackboard framing to trace out this thing. Then you straighten it, you get a little twist. Okay, so it's almost an edge. And the other way, you get the opposite twist. So you don't have this anymore. This is not equal to that. But you do have still have intuition coming from the belt. So that's the ribbon, the category of ribbons, if you like. So this is exactly true. But everything else still holds, because if you don't have cell intersection, you don't have turning back and coming back, then you don't have, never get the twist, kind of. You just, so, okay, you don't have going in front of the cell, then you don't get this issue. Anything else? I thought there was.
I have a question about this definition of time recovery.
Okay.
So the crossings, they both have the arrows going in the same direction. I mean, so you just drew the two crossings, but I could imagine
yeah.
there being like.
They are tangled. So yeah, I forgot. So this is what you mean. The S1, S2, they're actually letters, which are pretty fine. But as in this diagram, it draws both like this. The other ones, this one.
Right, but why don't you have the same thing with the arrows going up?
Because it's generated, but. So with a bunch of twisting and stuff, you can do them.
I see.
So
you define, one with the arrows going up as the appropriate twisted.
Yeah, the satisfying.
They both go up and then come down.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. So that's why the proof is really, like many steps you need, when I talk about projection, two-dimensional projection, but let's just not go into that. And one annoying thing, like today we're discussing, this is taking the name ribbon category, which is really annoying, because that's called the braid category. This is called the tangle category, like topological category. And this should be called the ribbon category, right? And this should be called ribboned category, right? Because I call that one braided. And called, you know, you should call ribboned. But anyway, so just call it category ribbons, maybe. I don't know.
In the case of ribbon category, it includes both braided and tangled.
Does it?
Or just for braid?
So maybe braid, it doesn't matter. Like, you can braid without introducing any.
Yeah, the braided category doesn't have those tangles.
Right? Right, it includes, right? It's a subcategory. So
yeah.
braid is a subcategory of tangles, tangle category. And also the frame braids, if you like, will be a subcategory of frame ribbons, except it doesn't give you anything new because you never have this issue, this randomizer one. And but the tangle is not a subcategory of ribbons because in that one it satisfies that. Because it doesn't satisfy, it's just different. I'll just put them.
The ribbon is not a subcategory of tangle, but a tangle is still a subcategory of ribbon.
No.
It doesn't satisfy that. So it's the rule.
But the
relation in tangle category is violated in ribbon category. So
you can project a ribbon category down to a tangle category. And by shrinking all the framing in the
ribbon category is defined as in that it doesn't satisfy that.
You
or ribbon category doesn't have to satisfy.
It doesn't have to satisfy that. Okay.
So the tangle category is still a ribbon category.
No, wait. How can a ribbon category satisfy that though?
Well, because
I maybe think through this carefully, but in principle, you can represent ribbon always by the tangle stuff, and it gives you a definite ribbon. So if you like, that's what you mean. Then okay. So as long as you keep that in mind, it's okay. Drawing a tangle, assuming blackboard framing, always gets your ribbon. But when you draw a ribbon, if you end up in the right place, but you always twist by 2pi. You never end with half to twist. And then you can always find a representation of tangles. I think so. Like if you have extra twists, you can just stick in this kind of stuff. So there's some kind of going between, but not at the same. Maybe I don't know how to phrase it properly, but you know.
So the category of ribbons does not include the category of tangles, but the category of tangles is a ribbon category.
Right? Oh, yes. Okay, sure. Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's not, you cannot fix the category, you just have to say, yeah, okay. Thanks.